session number 231000, reel 2.
Yes, after we'd met these two strange fellows in the woods, we began to look over our shoulders in Germany, because we felt we were being watched. I mean, it was so strange that we'd just been arrested by the Waffen-SS for 2.5 days, and that this Leutnant de Reserve should come walking through the woods just where we were. And then the next night, this Bürgermeister of Augsburg should come walking through the woods just where we were. We felt, whether we were followed, I don't know, but we felt we were under surveillance. And after this business in Rosenheim, the village outside anyhow, we were glad to get out of the German stranglehold altogether. And we felt much freer in Italy. We visited the north of Italy, we spent some time in Verona, and we visited Milan, of course, and then we went along the coast and came into France, along the Monton coast and up through France. And we felt less free in France because we went to a picture house in Paris and the waitress diddled me of 2 francs for a program. So we had a jaundiced view of the French and came home in due time.
So you mentioned that you were educated at school in Dundee.
Yes.
And then
university.
University at St. Andrews?
At St. Andrews. And I did a full 5 years. Apart from the 4 years degree course, after I decided to come into business, there was another complication. I met a girl, Vichentine, in 1933. I realised that if I was going to go into colonial service, I could be posted to Timbuktu or Akhaltabuya, whatever it might be. And that wouldn't be all too good. So I decided that I would follow my father's business, and so to do that I decided to stay on for another year and do a postgraduate degree in economics, and the course was a double course, economics and British constitutional and colonial history. And so I was 5 years up, and we came down from university together. She came from Lough Aber up in the West Highlands, and after university I had gone on to Glasgow, where my father got me into Pettigrew, as I've mentioned before, where the fashions buyer there was regarded as a real genius. He came from a distribution family. They had their own store in Carlisle. He was the second son. The elder son was following the father in Carlisle, but Kenneth was left loose. He'd been with Waring and Boren Hollings was in London, and had made his mark there. Got this post as general fashions manager in Glasgow. He was reckoned to be the best man in Scotland in fashions, and his departments were second only to Harrods. An enormous turnover, and we specialised also in furs. So I went through there, and this girl decided to do a business course at the Glasgow and West of Scotland Commercial College, and she went into insurance, and she lived in a private hotel 7 minutes walk from where I was living in Cecil Street, was Mrs. Thompson. And that's where I ended up.
And you... Wait. And this is the lady you eventually married?
Oh, yes.
And when did you marry?
1939. Engaged before war broke out. Decided, as I was in Bristol then, from Pettigrew's I went to London, because after 2.5 years with Routledge, well, he was a good man in many ways, but he had already had a director's son. It didn't turn out all that well. He was a kind of a flash Harry. He went to London, actually, from Pettigrew's. But I was the second director's son he had, and I had lots of dirty jobs to do. But I respected the man, and I learned an awful lot from him, a tremendous lot. But after 2.5 years, I was still getting only 28 shillings and 10 pence a week, 144 pence. And I said to my father, this is not going to do, because you've subsidised me all through school and university. You've been subsidising me here in Glasgow, paying my digs, which were 35 shillings a week, bed and breakfast and an evening meal, and you were giving me £2 in my pocket as well. This is not on. What do you want to do? So I think I should go to London. So he arranged to do a trip to London, and he asked Douglas to release me to drive the car. So we were away for 8 days, I think it was, and he knew all the London stores, and he knew most of the London management, because he's quite well known in the trade. And we went to Harrods first of all, and saw Woodman Burbage, and yes, delighted to take your son, Mr. Fife. We ask a premium of £85, and that allows him to stay in our hostel. And no question of a salary, but £85 premium to be allowed to join Harrods. And we sanked Woodman Burbage, we tried Darien Tom's, Harvey Nichols, the lot, the whole gamut of high-class stores, and the same thing applied, £80 to £90 premium for their hostel. And I said to my father, no, this is not going to do. You'll have to subsidise me again, and it's not on. So, well, what do you want to do? We were coming back in a taxi from Kensington. And I said, I want to go and see Pope. This was a man whom I'd met in 1933 when my father was renovating the store in Dundee. We did a tour of all the stores in England, starting at Kendall Mills in Manchester, for ideas, because we reckoned that we could pick thoughts from the southern stores. And we got to Gloucester, and we met the man who headed a group, the Pope stores, Gloucester, Bristol, Weymouth, Dorset, and he also had a family connection with stores in Birmingham through nephews. Bensley was his name. And I liked this man. He lived in Dowswall Manor, south of Gloucester. And I said, I want to see F.G. Pope. Why? He said, I think he just wants to see F.G. Pope. I think he might be helpful. So he rang Gloucester, my father, to find that F.G. Pope was in town. And he rang DLMS, which was Debenham Limited Manufacturing Supplies, and spoke to Pope. Come and see me in Welbeck Street. We went to Welbeck Street and explained that I was looking for a job south. I'd been with Kenneth Routledge and Kenneth Routledge? Said, yes. Oh, you know fashions then? You must, if you've been with Routledge. So we chatted again, and then he said, Mr. Fife, would you go and have a coffee with Betty through there? Betty, give Mr. Fife a cup of coffee and bring two coffees here. Father was shunted off, and I was not grilled, but I was questioned by F.G. Pope, and he was interested to know I had studied economics, because he thought that was important. And he said, right, I have a job for you here at Welbeck Fashions, which was the wholesale end of fashions for the whole of DLMS. No buyers were instructed to buy from Welbeck Fashions, but we had a composite range selected from all the various manufacturers available for sale, selected from our composite range to the buyers of the stores. There were 75 stores in England altogether. And you'll come and you'll join Mr. Metcalfe. He's an Aberdonian. You'll understand him. I never do. So I went down to Metcalfe, and he said, there and then, I'll give you £270 a year. £270 a year from 20 and 10 pounds a week. So I went to London. And I was lucky enough, the man who was a friend of my father, and he actually was our best man. We knew him well, older than me, obviously. But he had a girlfriend who lived in Inverness, a private hotel, Inverness Hotel, in Inverness Terrace, off the Bayswater Road. And I went down there, and I was no more than 3 or 4 months there when Pope came up and he said, I want you to go to Bristol. I want you to become second in command to my nephew, Donald Pope Grant, who had gone through the fashion mill and was running the store in Bristol, Jones of Bristol. And so I went down to Jones of Bristol, and there I was. And by this time, we'd become engaged earlier in the year, and In any case, whether I'd been in Bristol or London, we thought it wise to get married at Christmas, because I would certainly be on leave, on holiday.
You were sure that war was going to be...
No, this was long before war was ever thought of.
Oh, sorry, leave from work, I beg your pardon.
Yes. I would get leave from either London or Bristol, and we arranged to be married on the 27th of December. Come hellfire or snow, as it happened, it was marvellous. But that was it. And then, of course, war broke out, and I had got into a farm south of Bristol, Lower Fayland in Somerset, where Donald had lived before he got married, and he fixed me up with Tom and Mary Frost, where Mary wore the trousers and Tom did the milking.
So this was your arrangements in Bristol?
Yes, in Bristol, living in Lower Fayland Farm, where Donald got me in, and he lived in a delightful village called Frenchy, which was where the Quaker movement first started, at the Aul at Frenchy. A lovely village, with a huge village green. The Aul was here, and the church was over there, along with the pub, and the village was down here, and a lovely cottage. It mentioned in Doomsday Book, it had a huge 10-foot wall all round it, with three orchards, a large garden in the front for flowers, quite a large vegetable garden at the back. It was a small cottage. It had a nice dining room, a nice lounge, two bedrooms upstairs, and that was all, and a bathroom. And to get to the bathroom, you went through the dining room, you passed through the kitchen. The kitchen was a tiled floor with an iron manhole set in the middle of it. And when you lifted the manhole, you looked down in 5,000 gallons of rainwater, which is a sole source of supply. We had to boil all the water, but that was the water supply on a hand pump. And then the bathroom was out there to the back door. But a lovely cottage, and they had a wee girl by this time, Sally. War broke out, and Donald was a TA officer in the Gloucesters, and he was embodied immediately. So I was left in sole charge of the departments, and it had been our habit each night after we locked up the departments, we took a walk to the Grand Hotel, and we drank 2 schooners each of Bristol milk, which was a lovely sherry by Harvey's, less cloying than Bristol cream. We had our 2 schooners each, and Donald got into his 4:10 open tourer, drove back to Fayland, to Frenchy. I jumped into my Bentley and roared down to Lower Fayland. Donald was embodied and disappeared to command a searchlight battery on Avonmouth Docks, and he was on duty with a searchlight battery from 7:30 each evening until 7:30 the following morning. He had other duties during the day, but he still continued to come down at night just before 6 o'clock, and we still drank our 2 pooches, and we discussed business, of course. I kept him up to date with what was going on, and we continued in that way. I was out quite often for a meal with Donald and Mary, at weekends particularly, when he had the odd time off. And so there I was, as another colleague there. We were very worried, because each morning we heard of losses at sea. And the Germans, of course, had their submarines well positioned all over the oceans before war ever broke out. And we were losing thousands of tons of tonnage regularly. This was reported in the local press, of course, and many of those ships were well known in the Bristol Channel area, and each loss was almost like a death in the family. There were advertisements in the papers for gunners for the merchant navy urgently required, and these appeared every day. Now, by this time it was October, the end of October, and these stressed the fact that there weren't enough gunners coming forward. What were the young men doing? Rather implying they were hanging back in time of need, and also suggesting that that was the reason for this huge tonnage loss, because the young men weren't answering the call. And this was creating disquiet locally. Anyhow, this chap, Beaton, was sitting at coffee one morning and he said, "Look, we're sitting on our bums here doing damn all for the war." And he said, we'll be called up, no doubt. But we can be doing something now. Look at this ad today. So many more ships torpedoed yesterday. We should look into this." The ad was sponsored by Elder and Fife, shipping agent and the banana people, of course. Same spelling as me, three F's. So I thought about it, and I thought, well, I'll be called up. So we'll go and see these people. So John and I went down to Elder and Fife's office, and eventually we put up to a wee room where a young man was sitting, very dapper, impeccably dressed, and a white carnation in his lapel. "Name and business, please." Well, we gave our names, and no reason why we shouldn't give the names. "Business, the advertisement for merchant gunners." "Oh." "Even a name like Fife hasn't a chance of getting on my list." This was his immediate riposte. "Even a name like Fife has no chance of getting on my list." "I said, I beg your pardon." "He said, I have 747 names on the list, and it closed over three weeks ago. Your name has no chance of getting on. Sorry, gentlemen, you've wasted your time." And I was annoyed about this. This name like Fife annoyed me intensely. I said, "Hey, wait a minute. You tell me you have a list of 740 volunteers for gunners?" Yes, I have." I said, "Well, you're only one office advertising for gunners. Must be many others who have similar lists. So you don't need gunners. So you're advertising what you haven't got. It's dishonest advertising." I said, "If I do that in my business, I'm in trouble, deep trouble." I said, "Look, in addition to that, that advertisement is so couched in language that it implies that the young men of this country are not answering the call, and you are suggesting that for that reason we are losing tons and tons and tons of shipping, day by day by day, and you're spreading disquiet and unrest in the public population in time of war." I said, "That's a crime in time of war." And so I gave him a warning. I wagged my finger at this wee boy. I said, "If that advertisement appears tomorrow morning, I'll be at the editor's office tomorrow afternoon and I'll blow your whole story sky high. 747 names closed 3 weeks ago and you are still putting this ad in the papers." I said, "I don't want to see that ad till Christmas or it'll be trouble." And he didn't appear again. Went back and I said to John, "John, I will never volunteer for anything again. I'm going to be called up. When they want me, they'll call me, but I'm not volunteering under any circumstances." So that was that. And then, November it was sometime, Donald came in one morning, unusual for him, came in and he said, "I want a word with you. I've just seen an ACI, Army Council Instruction, secret. And they are forming a new unit under the intelligence umbrella. Can't tell you anything about it, but it's a new formation altogether, and they're desperately anxious for linguists." Now he said, "You speak some languages, and this is the kind of job you should do." And I said, "Sorry, Donald, I'm not filling in any form." He had a form handy. "I'm sorry, Donald," and I told him the story about Elder and Fife and gunners from the Merchant Navy with a closed list. I said, "So, Donald, I'm not sorry. I'll wait till I'm called up." But he said, "Look, this is important, very important. You don't understand the urgency yet. You haven't seen the ACI, I have." He said, "I'll put your name in." I said, "Donald, I can't stop you, but I'm not volunteering. I'm not filling in any form." Well, he said, "That may be, but this is important." So off he went. We didn't fall out. But that was that. And then I was getting married, and I told the firm, of course, and I told Donald, and Donald said, "Where are you going to live?" I said, "Oh, I think Mary Frost will put us both up. It's very comfortable, as you know, and we'll both come in the car in the morning, and Ailsa can take the car away and spend the rest of the day herself. Come for me at night." So, a week later, before December crisis time came, he came in one day and said, Mary and I have been thinking this over. He said, I'll be posted quite shortly to another place altogether, and Mary thinks she'll go off with Sally to her parents in Gloucester. And we would love it if you would be interested in taking her for the cottage. He said, you can have it for £2 a week. Lock, stock and barrel. He said, you know the cottage? You've been there, you know everything is there, the lot. I said, but Tom, this is an astonishing suggestion. He said, I'm sure my wife-to-be will be delighted because it's a lovely place. And so we ended up in Frenchy, Newlands Cottage Frenchy, where we installed ourselves there. That's another story altogether. And then, the end of January, beginning of February, I got a letter through the post. Please report to room 055, the War Office, Northumberland Avenue, Whitehall, on such and such a day at such and such a time. This is an intensely secret matter. Do not discuss this with anybody, and do not under any circumstances reveal the address to which you are being called under pain of DORA, you know, Defence of Railway. And a railway warrant enclosed. So my wife read this. Well, she said, it looks as if it's an order. It's an order. But I said, I'm going to London, as you know, every 2 weeks. So let's delay next week's visit and use this blooming railway warrant and save the department some money. And in due time, I went up to London. I knew my way about London because I'd lived there. And was directed to a wee room, I think maybe the first floor, perhaps, after all sorts of corridors, where there was a table and four young men were sitting. Not my own age. We were warned, of course, this was secret, so we didn't even say good morning. We just looked at each other and I sat down. Now, three men were there. I was number four. No, four men, and I was number five. A little while later, two more came in separately, and there were seven of us. We hadn't said a word, didn't even discuss the weather. We just sat. And when the seventh had been introduced to the room, a bell must have rung somewhere, and a hole in the panel opened at the back, and a young man came in, beautifully dressed. Morning, gentlemen. Just sat. You all speak French. Just sat. Said, I'm going to give you a piece of dictation in French. I will repeat each phrase. I will give you the phrase first of all, very slowly. I will repeat it a second time, just in case you've missed something the first time. And you will write down what I say. And when we have completed that piece of dictation, I will collect your papers. They're there on the table in front of you. Please move up to the table. Papers and pen are provided. Someone shuffled up to the table and sat down. And he said, I will collect your papers afterwards, and then I will study them. You will remain here, and I will call you in one by one alphabetically. So, do you want all this?
Yes, yes indeed.
We sat down, and this young chap started. He stood up to speak to us, and he said, in French, of course, Mr. Crow was sitting on the branch of a tree, comma. Mr. Crow was sitting on the branch of a tree, comma. And in his beak he held a piece of cheese, bah! And he exploded the French, bah! And in his beak he held a piece of cheese, bah! Mr. Fox came running through the wood, comma. Mr. Fox came running through the wood, comma. Looked up and saw Mr. Crow on the branch of the tree, bah! And I thought, good God, Aesop's Fables, translated into French by La Fontaine, which I had studied in depth at school. I had studied French before I reached the qualifying stage. I could speak better than he could speak. And here I was apparently undergoing examination for intelligence. And I think the others were equally disappointed. It was so futilely puerile, childish. And he picked up all the papers and disappeared back through that hole in the wall. And I was number four when I was called in. I sat down at the table and he said, Mr. Fife, where did you learn speak French? I told him, learned it at school from the days before the qualifying class, I added. Well, he understood that, although I don't know, it didn't matter. And he said, but this is excellent, this is very good indeed. What, did you pursue it? I said, yes, I have a degree in languages. I said, I speak French and German and Spanish. Oh, excellent. You'll be hearing from me in due course, Mr. Fife. Thank you. Good morning. And I got up to go out. No. Out through another wee hole in the wall into the caverns beyond. And that was my morning experience at Room 055, Northumberland Avenue.
Purely linguistic, nothing about...
Not another thing, not another question. Not a question at all. Donald must have put in my name and address, and he said I speak languages, but he didn't know enough to give a CV. But there was no other questioning at all. He read this bit of paper, this booky thing, this jotter, and said, this is excellent, Mr. Fife, you'll be hearing from me in due time. And I went home, I exploded to my wife when I got home. I said, this is the British intelligence. I won't tell you my thoughts and love from then. But then shortly after that, it must have been March, I got a call-up instruction to report to the Board of Trade in Bristol at quarter to twelve, this was, on this morning, and came in the first post, of course, before I left home, and I said to my wife, well, this will be a question of filling in forms for 10 minutes. So would you like to come down to town for lunch today? Meet me at the ground at 12:30, and I'll tell you what happens. I went down to this office and it was received by a tall man in civilian clothes, but he turned out to be the great hero of the First War in the West Country, a double VC. Lieutenant Colonel he was then. I've forgotten his name, sadly, but he greeted me, thanked me for the time I was sparing him, and I thought, hell, I'm told to come to this place. And we chatted. We chatted about all sorts of things. Background, how I liked the Bristol area, where was I living, Frenchie, yes, it's a lovely place, da-da-da-da-da, and everything. And time went on, and time went on, no forum filling that I could see. And then at length he thanked me again for having given him so much time. And again I thought, I have no option, this is a call-up. But he was very pleasant, very polite, and very friendly. And then he said, well, thank you, Mr. Fife. I've put you down as PO. And I must have mouthed post office. Because he burst out laughing. He said, potential officer. So we both laughed, he shook my hand, and off I went. But that was that. It was 12:20. I'd been there, not for falling in front of 10 minutes, but over half an hour. A delightful interview, which I cherished for quite a long time. A delightful man he was, delightful man. And that was that. However, I realised that if I stayed on in Bristol, I'd be called up to an English county regiment, which I didn't want, because I had family claims on 3 Highland regiments, and university claim on the Seaforce. So I discussed with my wife and I said, look, we'll pack up job, Donald's cottage and everything else, take all what goods and chattel we have back home, I'll deregister here, down at that office where I've just been, and I'll register, we'll go and register in Dundee, from my parents' home, and we'll settle north of the border, and I'll make quite sure my call-up comes with a kilt. And that we did. We went home, I deregistered in Bristol, gave them full details of my Dundee address, said I was north of the border, first of their group, and registered in Dundee at the office in Town Square, and that was it. And I set about trying to get into the Royal Scots, the Gordons, and the Argylls, and I met the system at each office. You can't jump the system, chum. The system is a call-up, and you just can't jump it. Not even you. So I had this frustration to face, and I went across to St. Andrews, where my old economics professor was by then Army Liaison Officer, and Wilkie Nisbet. He had come to St. Andrews just in my last year from Glasgow. He was all here, LLB, And we got on very well, because I was doing, I'd done both general and special economics, and we had quite a friendly relationship. I knew his wife and family, good golfers they all were, he and his sons, and he was quite pleased to see me. I explained the purpose of my visit was to go and track down the Seaforth Regiment, the 4th Seaforth in particular, to which our OTC had been attached. I was never in the OTC, but I took a chance on it. And I said, I want to join the OTC. Major Mackay, Colonel Mackay, to you, Lieutenant Colonel. He's in Tain. Now, she's in Elgin. Oh, I said, I'll go to Elgin. He said, you don't need to go to Elgin. No need at all. I said, but I want to go to Elgin. I have to go join the Sea Force. He said, look, in my capacity as liaison officer, I can tell you there's an OCHU starting in Belhaven School, Newton Bar.